This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
If inflation is this high, why are interest rates so low? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Let us start this morning by trying to resolve a paradox. Inflation is on the rise in America, yet interest rates are getting lower still. On the one hand, there's word this morning the consumer price index went up 0.3% in April, the most in 10 months, yet look at benchmark interest rates. On Thursday, we turn to Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Morning, Diane.
Good morning.
You know, we do have inflation here. There's no two ways about it.
We did see inflation pick up in the month of April and really driven by gains in everything from prices at the pump to the grocery store. The problem is we didn't see increases in things like apparel prices and the places you'd like to see it. That's a problem for anyone working paycheck to paycheck. This increase in inflation, we'd like to see it reflective of a warmer economy, not because of external factors.
Now, I'm glad I have you on the line, Diane, because you could explain something. Because given signs of inflation here, you'd think that interest rates would be higher, yet I'm looking at the yield on the 10-year Treasury note right now. It's 2.5%. It's low.
Yes, it is. And we've got several factors going on. One, let's face it, inflation is still low. But more importantly, as you've got, Europe is cooling. And in fact, their economic growth looks worse. And the European Central Bank looks like they're going to have to finally put some money where their mouth is and take action and try to stimulate their economy more. Then you've got Mr. Putin's hubris in Europe, and that's caused a flight to safety around the world. You've now got places in the periphery of Europe like Portugal that are paying very little more than we do to fund their long-term bonds. That just doesn't make any sense. Our fiscal situation here is much better than there.
Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, thank you for this.
Thank you.
We've been covering an ongoing swarm of protests by fast food workers looking for higher pay in the U.S. Today, the protests are going global, involving fast food workers across more than 30 countries, from Argentina to New Zealand. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark has some international comparisons.
More than 70% of McDonald's sales come from overseas. Here's a woman who sells some of those burgers and fries.
My name is Taylor McClone, and I work for McDonald's in Auckland, New Zealand.
In New Zealand, minimum wage is much higher than in the U.S., and McDonald's workers are unionized. In U.S. dollars, McClune makes $12.86 an hour. When she recently visited Philadelphia and told some McDonald's workers there how much she makes.
Surprised, excited. A lot of the expressions were holy, something I'm not going to say.
But in other parts of the world, the $8 or so an hour many U.S. fast food workers make seems pretty good, says restaurant analyst Peter Soleil with Telsey Advisory Group. Here's an interesting calculation he did to put wages for Chinese KFC workers in perspective. In the U.S., it takes about an hour's worth of wages to afford a basic meal at a fast food restaurant.
In China, you probably have to work 3 or 4 hours to be able to afford one of those meals.
I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
In Jersey City and other towns along the New Jersey side of the Hudson River, small-scale entrepreneurs are taking aim at that urban ritual of waiting for the darned bus. Private operators of minibuses now ply the streets. Amid questions about safety and traffic, there are new regulations on the way. Marketplace's Dan Weissman takes us to the wild west of the Hudson.
Tahir Haroun Khan tell it, most drivers regulate themselves. He drives part-time, but today we're both passengers riding near the front of a jitney heading down Bergen Line Avenue. He explains how drivers keep out of each other's way.
They try to keep two traffic lights before or ahead. Like, see what he did? There's a bus behind him. So he'll skip that passenger, try to get the space, and he'll pick the other passengers up. So that way they both could make money.
People call the buses jitneys, colectivos, minivans. They've got maybe 20 seats. They charge less than New Jersey Transit buses. They stop on any corner for you, and they always make change, something New Jersey Transit drivers will not do. They've been driving through towns like Jersey City, Weehawken, and Bergen for decades, and they're still growing, 40% just in the last 4 years, according to regulators. Big operators rent out branded buses to drivers like Pascual Gomez. At the end of his route, he waits in line for a dispatcher to call his turn. He pays $100 a shift and buys the gas. I ask how much he makes.
Well, it's the pen, man. See, today I don't have a dime for me yet.
He plays by the rules. At one end of his line, he waits for a dispatcher to call his turn.
Sometimes I wait here maybe 20 minutes, sometimes an hour.
I describe Pasquale's setup to Nicholas Sacco, the state senator who sponsored the new regulations.
If they were all that organized, maybe we wouldn't have needed the bill. We had no desire to get rid of the omnibuses just to make them safe.
The new regs include higher insurance minimums, $1 million, and a hotline for riders to report anything unsafe. Many of the jitneys fall under federal regulation. Taking passengers back and forth to Manhattan, that's interstate commerce. Ann Farrow runs the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. She doesn't think tighter regs will slow down the business.
It's a supply-demand situation. Trucks and buses are like water. They will always find a way through.
Pascual Gomez would like to see things more tightly regulated, even if it meant fewer buses.
We have too many going up and down like crazy, because that will make us do things that we don't want to do.
Meaning, not all drivers follow the rules. In Jersey City, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
And A1 Steak Sauce is breaking up its monogamous relationship with steak and becoming a playa with other foods. According to its Facebook site, A1 is taking the word steak off the label. The company's produced a video that chronicles the A1 steak relationship breaking up over time as viewed through social media. As A1 starts to go out on dates with chicken, with broccoli, with corn, eventually A1 changes its relationship status to "it's complicated." It's like a lot of modern relationships. When going out on a date, don't forget to bring a condiment. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.